Hey, it's Don Coscarelli, filmmaker. I just wrote a book. Check it out. It's called Fiction, Tales from the World of Phantasm. And it can teach you all the things that you never knew about the Phantasm film series. A lot of interesting stuff. Horror, violence, not much sex. Check it out. Now available on Amazon, paperback, and Kindle.
This is The Gala Show. I'm your reporter on the beat, Gala Avery. On this episode, you may know my guest as a singer of Smash Mouth, a motorcycle enthusiast, or even as a voice actor for brands such as Taco Bell, Mattel, Hot Wheels, and Tostitos. But here on The Gala Show, I simply know him as my friend who loves watching movies, Zach Goody. Hi, Zach.
Hi, Gala.
So before we bring the topic today, I have a question for you. You're a dad to two wonderful boys. I love seeing pictures of them because they clearly have very different personalities, but I can see you in both of them. So what is one movie that you can't wait to show each of your sons?
Oh, wow.
And it can be a different movie for each boy because I'm sure they have different tastes.
Put me on the spot. Well, they've both seen a lot of movies and a lot of weird movies. I tried to show them all the weird stuff I watched as a kid, you know, Yellow Submarine. And
that's like one of the best ones to show them.
Yeah. What's the other, the Belgian cartoon one, the French one? Fantastic Planet. Fantastic Planet. Is that what it's called? Yeah.
Yeah, Le Planet Sauvage.
Yeah, that one. They were kind of creeped out by that one.
So was I.
Yeah. Shoot, what do I want to show them? They already watched all the Universal Monster Horror, the box set, and like that.
Because I know you and I have talked about like movies like sometimes that our parents showed us and like we were too young kind of to see them.
Right. Which is kind of an idea I'm working on for another project. Yeah.
And so it's like, what, like, are you waiting to show your son something? Like, is there something you're like, this is too good to show you right now?
Yeah. No, there's a ton. I mean, a lot of the 80s stuff, which is like, you know, the it's too sexy or whatever. Like that's my favorite genre probably is like, you know, teensploitation, like
too sexy,
you know,
yeah. The genre of too sexy,
like, you know, like Fast Times and Last American Virgin and all that kind of stuff is obviously not appropriate for a 7 or 10 year old. But then there's lots of stuff that I saw as a kid, which, you know, you reassess years later because the rating system wasn't the same. Things, as I told you, my dad owned basically the New Beverly of Provincetown, Massachusetts, where I grew up. So I grew up watching every possible. I mean, at age 10, you know, Rocky Horror, The Shining, Breathless, Road Warrior, film noir, John Waters, Pink Flamingo, every possible thing you could see as a 10-year-old. And almost none of that is appropriate. You know, like probably the one, like I saw The Shining and Clockwork Orange multiple times as a child.
I'm trying to remember the first time I saw those. I think I might have been a kid too.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, it sticks with you.
I remember when my dad showed me Deliverance. We used to fast forward through the squeal like a pig scene.
Wow.
We used to fast forward and then we would just watch the rest of it. And to be honest, still to this day, I do fast forward that.
Yeah, that's pretty disturbing. That's still disturbing.
It's still too disturbing for me as 27.
Well, the version that I used to watch The Shining of was one that my dad had taped off network television. So I still remember, like I memorized the lines, but it was all the edited lines. So, you know, he has this whole thing where he goes, you've had your whole freaking life to think things over. And so we sampled that on our first album like many years ago. And then there's the other part where she has the baseball bat. And he's like, Wendy, you didn't let me finish my sentence. I'm not going to hurt you. I'm just going to bash your brains and I'm going to bash them right the hell in. So every time I watch The Shining, I remember the edited version. So I don't have an answer for you. There's so many movies I want to show to them. I actually want to show them Hard Day's Night soon. I think that'll be a good one.
Have they seen Help?
They haven't seen Help or Hard Day's Night, only Yellow Submarine, and then they watched a bunch of the Get Back thing, but they couldn't stick with it for all, like, whatever, 3 hours, but they watched a bunch of it. I have a huge collection here of stuff to show them.
Yeah,
So they will be watching all kinds of stuff, but I don't know. If kids are different these days, they don't necessarily care about the 70s and 80s stuff, like, you know.
Not yet.
You might have been the last generation of, you know, of kids that, like, their cool dads showed them stuff and they cared about it, you know?
Give them a few more years.
Yeah.
Once they're into like their teens.
That's what I'm thinking.
And then girls start thinking it's kind of cool.
I'm hoping it's not just going to be YouTube and manga forever.
Yeah, manga's not so bad.
No, it's cool, but it's just
full disclosure.
There should be more.
I have a very large manga collection, so full disclosure.
Yeah, I got him. I got him this one for his birthday. Spy Family. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
And so I got him all nine, but then his mom had already got him two of them, so I returned them to Matsuo, which is like where I go shop for my manga, the Japanese market. And I know you want a Chainsaw Man, so I'm like, cool. So I got two Chainsaw Man 1 and 2. So we read the first one. I glanced at the second one, and it's full on boobage. It's like super inappropriate. I'm like, you can't read that one. I took it back. I thought they were all like,
No. Chainsaw Man is definitely boobage. That's a level of boobage that I don't think he's ready for quite yet.
I need to look a little closer because he's only 10.
Yes, but you got him on a good path.
Yeah, I hope so.
I can give you some off mic recommendations for your son.
Excellent.
Now, as always, my guest gets to bring their topic to the mic. Zach, what are we going to be talking about today, and why did you decide to choose it?
Well, the idea that I thought of for my episode is the idea of, quote unquote, the new guy. Because as people may not know or may know out there, I joined the band Smash Mouth about 2 years ago as the new singer. Which people kind of found out about last week when Steve unfortunately passed away, the old singer of Smash Mouth. And so I think a lot of people didn't even know that I was in the band, or they see me from a distance like, oh, he looks kind of like that guy. So this last couple weeks have been very interesting with lots of messages and new followers and, comments and the whole thing.
And questions about what's going on.
Yeah, because a lot of people didn't even know he's been out of the band for years, So and I've been touring with them for 2 summers now, playing tons and tons of shows all over the world. But I think there's like a group of people that, once they don't want to see anybody, they want the original lineup. They're like, it's not the same. And then there's a group of people that don't even know or don't care or don't notice. And then a group of people who like me or the new guy. So, and I've had that thought too before, like when I went to go see Journey a couple of years ago at the Hollywood Bowl and they had the new guy. And I'm like, Journey is a lot of people like Steve Perry. I mean, the guy's like one of the best singers of all time. They had this huge success. It was very high profile with the new singer. But I sat there looking at this sold out crowd and I'm like, but a lot of people like the new guy.
And a lot of people want to listen.
Yeah. So it's like that kind of carries across with music, obviously with high profile bands that we were talking about, AC/DC, obviously, and Van Halen and Black Flag and Faith No More and all these other bands, not to mention all the 90s bands now, not just Smash Mouth, but, Alice in Chains, Stone Temple Pilots, Sublime. These guys all have new singers and they've all been touring, playing festivals for years and years and years with new singers, to varying degrees. Like, AC/DC is probably the highest level of where, they put an album out, Highway to Hell, Bon Scott dies. They come back with a new singer a year later and they put out with the third best-selling album in history, Back in Black. So it's like that they pulled that one off pretty well, and Bon Scott's one of my, I love old AC/DC. Van Halen, same thing. They were more successful with the new singer, although people don't, some people like him,
they
some
don't
people
associate,
don't. Yeah. So it's interesting. And then I thought about that as a topic, as a connection to film, with, the new guy, that can go Batman, Spider-Man, James Bond.
Yeah, I have a few that I pulled out of my woodwork to discuss today.
One thing we had in common is the James Bond thing we talked about. I kind of got returned on to Moonraker from your podcast. Because I think I told you the story. It came out when I was like 9 years old and I was in Europe. My dad took me and my brother to Europe and we were in somewhere in Europe. And he took us to go see it because that was like the movie of the week. It just came out. And they wouldn't let us in because I think it was rated R, or I don't think it was rated X. It couldn't have been rated X,
right?
No,
it couldn't have been.
Yeah, so it must have been a hard R at the time, or maybe we were in a country where they were more strict, or I don't remember. But for whatever reason, we couldn't get in. So I don't think I had a memory of seeing it, but then when you guys talked about it, I'm like, I don't know if I've actually ever sat and watched Moonraker. And like Quentin was goofing on it and your dad was like loving it. And I think you loved it too.
Oh, I definitely loved
it. So I watched it like whatever that was a couple months ago. And I loved it. It's like so good. It has like the best of everything that James Bond, it's still cheesy, but it's so good. I've watched like 3 times in the last month.
I have too.
But like as a kid of the 70s and 80s, my first James Bond was Roger Moore, and I love Sean Connery. I mean, obviously he's like amazing, but, My first James Bond was, Spy Who Loved Me, right? That's the one with the, in Egypt, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Oh God, Bond knowledge is being tested.
Yeah, no, that's the one with Crispin Glover's dad is the bad guy. They drop the scorpion and then Jaws, the pyramid and the whole thing. So that was like my first memory.
Or is that Diamonds Are Forever?
Diamonds Are Forever. I'm sorry, Spy Who Loved Me is Sean Connery. Yeah, that was his, okay. Diamonds Are Forever, sorry. So that was my first time seeing Bond. And so in my mind, like, Roger Moore was James Bond. And later on, I discovered
he was the new guy.
He was the new guy. So, you know, he pulled it off pretty well for a while. Yeah. You know,
I think that's a great topic. I think we're going to get on. I think we're going to get on in there.
I think I've rambled so much. The topic, we're already out of time.
No, we're not out of time. Because you know what? I'm going to be starting our timer now. The topic for today is the new guy.
But first, it's time for a commercial break.
I might be vegetarian, but that doesn't mean I can't enjoy a good spice rub. My favorite place to get them is Smoked Bros, a veteran-owned and operated business that sells premium handcrafted dry rubs, spice blends, and seasonings. Psst, guys, you can even put it on your popcorn. My favorites are Honey Badger, because he doesn't give a bleep, and jelly and peanut flavor topping, because some things just taste better together. The website even has recipes, so go check out smokedbros.com to support a veteran-owned and operated business and fill your cabinet with delicious flavor.
And we're back.
30 minutes on the clock, and our time starts now. Well, I got to ask the first question. How does it feel to be the new guy?
It feels simultaneously totally natural and completely bizarre. For some reason, when I auditioned for the gig, you know, I've been in bands for 30 years. I've been a lead singer forever. I've had a zillion bands and put out tons of albums in different genres. And, you know, but I never had, you know, any huge success. I just kind of was plugging away, doing my thing. And when I saw the ad a couple of years ago, you know, Smash Mouth, new singer, I was like, huh, that's weird. Like, I don't think I fit into that, but I'll, you know, on a fluke.
Why not try?
I basically sent him an email. I said, like, hey, you want, like, I tell everyone, I'm like, hey, you want a guy with like some 90s tattoos and a dad bod? Like, I could step into that. Here's my YouTube page. As a kind of like, you know, just as like not taking it too seriously. And they responded pretty quickly and like said, hey, you know, here, you know, film an audition. I did that. One thing led to another. I flew up to San Jose and went, you know, met the guys. Then they narrowed it down and to the final four, and I auditioned and I ended up getting the gig. And, you know, my first show was a festival in Mexico in front of 50,000 people. Like, just, okay, you're on. No, we had practiced like three times.
Wow. Yeah. Really?
It was like Kings of Leon, you know, Blondie, The Strokes, and us.
Wow.
And, yeah. And, you know, stone cold sober, totally just like, you know, just experiencing the moment. Cause I'd trained my whole life for that. Like, I wasn't nervous at all. It was like, but I didn't know the crowd, cause it was a festival. So there's like a black curtain that parts and you're there and there's literally 50,000 wow. people. Yeah. There's footage of it on YouTube. Some guy took drone footage, which is incredible. It's like, it shows
that must really add to like the out of body experience. Like when you watch it on a drone footage,
it was crazy. But our drummer, Randy, shout out to Randy Cook. Right before we went on, like, we had a little huddle backstage, like, all right, here we go. This is going to be the show. And he just goes, he pulls out like the Will Ferrell, like, more cowbell. He's like, Zach, feel free to explore the stage. It's a big stage, you know? So I went out there and I just like totally like worked the crowd and just like was like, it totally clicked. And then people seemed to love it. And every show has been really good since then. And I had no idea it would be such a natural fit. Like I thought that I had a higher voice. I have a different style, whatever, but for whatever reason, it seems to be working. People seem to like it. So in that way, it feels totally natural to be the new guy. On the other hand, I'm replacing an iconic front man who has this very distinctive voice, and people have this crazy, like, very, you know, unlike some other bands where it's just a band, like Smash Mouth has this, you know, very
iconic,
yeah, you know, 90s Shrek thing, meme thing going on.
The Shrek thing is definitely big shoes to fill.
Maybe we should talk about Shrek for half an hour.
I know. Right, just like start talking about like Donkey.
Is Puss in Boots the new guy?
Okay. Well, I love Puss in Boots too. Specifically too. Like,
I haven't seen it.
I don't really care about Puss in Boots 1, but Puss in Boots 2. This is what you need to show your children.
So it's like Bride of Frankenstein, Road Warrior. It's like,
yeah,
it's like the sequel's better than the original.
The sequel's definitely better than the original. Interesting. You need to show your sons that.
I think they saw it. I think mom took him to see that one without me. I don't think I could take any more Shrek in my life.
Well, actually, I don't blame you.
People come in costume. They come in. They throw us, you know, VHS tapes to sign.
No way,
you know,
really?
The first one of the first shows, someone threw a Shrek VHS on stage, and was like, you know, here, this is for you. It's like over and over again. So I finally got my attention. I'm like, oh, cool. Thanks. I took it. We played the show. We left and like went to the next town. Then I realized when I got home, like, oh, he wanted me to sign. So our guitar player searched him out and like did detective work and found the guy on social media. And we all signed it and mailed it to him. Oh, I was like, sorry, so I'm the new guy. I don't know about this stuff yet.
It's interesting though, like to call like the new guy, because like when we were talking about bands, it's like you definitely have a new guy that fits into like kind of the greater scheme of things and has a catalog of music that's already been made and then more music that will be made. And then someone like a character like James Bond, it's just like an actor that's being cast right in a role and like a character. So
it is different. I mean, obviously I guess Batman and Spider-Man, not as much because they're wearing masks for one thing in terms of bringing their personality to the role. So I guess if you're like Max Weinberg, the new drummer for Slipknot, I'm sorry, not Max, his son, Weinberg, he wears a mask. So he's the quote unquote new guy from Slipknot, but you know, he gets to wear a mask. So he blends in. It's a lot easier probably.
I don't know. I'm like, I'm a Toby Maguire, Spidey girl.
Yeah. I just rewatched those pretty recently for the first time in a long time. You know what though? I really love Andrew Garfield now, like as an actor. Like I wasn't on board at all. During the Spider-Man years. I don't know. He seemed too tall and like, he just didn't seem like the right body type to me. I don't know. I didn't hate him, but
we get used to what's already on screen.
Yeah. And, but honestly he's done like a handful of movies now that I love, like the Rent movie he did, the musical, cause I starred in Rent a couple years ago. So I'm like, I'm super into Rent. But this movie that no one else cares about or has seen that I bring up to everyone, this movie called Under the Silver Lake.
Oh yeah,
which I love. It's like my favorite neo noir of the last like bunch of years. I watch it like all. It's like a comfort movie and has all these amazing LA locations, and I love it. I think it's a cross between like The Big Sleep and The Big Lebowski. I think it's brilliant, but it totally flopped. Like nobody I know.
I know a few people who like that movie. It's like they either really love it or they've never heard of it.
Yeah, it's pretty much. I think the director did It Follows.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that one.
And The Myth of the American Sleepover, I think.
I haven't seen that, but I've seen It Follows.
They're both great. I mean, I love it. Anyway, Andrew Garfield grew on me, and then that TV show he did with the Mormon killing thing that was on Hulu. It was really good.
Do you think it's better to like put your own spin on it, like when you're the new guy?
Or that's the question right there. So that's kind of what you have to do. You have to put your own spin on it, but you also have to
be faithful to
the legacy. Unless you're going for, you know, I mean, the best example of that is probably Faith No More, because before Mike Patton, they were this like punky band with this like singer that was super iconic and weird. And when Mike Patton joined, he had a completely different voice, and they had a huge career, you know. So you have to make a conscious decision to say, okay, I'm going to go in a totally new direction with the new guy. We're going to go full on Sammy Hagar, or you have to say we're going Alice in Chains, and you want the guy to sound, you know, as much like the old guy as possible.
Well, I think there would be a fear that like it would almost be, I don't want to say mockery, because if you're stepping into someone's shoes and like you imitate them so well that all of a sudden it's like, are you just imitating or are you honoring? Like, that worry?
Yeah, no, all the time. I mean, I tend to have a higher tenor, kind of like my natural singing voice is more like, you know, Peter Gabriel or Elvis Costello or Sting or Pixies, or like more of a higher kind of rangy voice. Whereas Steve's voice is very chesty, baritone, throat, chest voice. And so that was my main concern. Like, physically, can I do it? Like, you know, will it tear up my throat? And for some reason, it just clicks and it just seems to work. And, you know, I don't think I sound that much like him, but I mean, I see the comments, they're like, he sounds exactly like him. So
that's so funny. I mean, and also I think it helps that like you were like chosen by the band. Like, yeah. They brought you in. They accepted you, right?
No, they've been amazing.
Right.
Yeah,
right?
they're amazing. They've all been great. And they're happy to be working and everybody gets along, and you know, so that's been awesome. I think part of it is just because I have a background in theater and, you know, acting and performing and doing plays and memorizing scripts and doing voiceovers and things like that. So I'm pretty good at like just, you know, grabbing onto something and doing it. Say, hey, do this in an English accent, do this in whatever. So it's like I kind of can imitate him enough where it sounds close enough to be good and add my own little flair to it.
Yeah, so
I don't like to talk about my flair.
Yeah, don't talk about your flair. Stop talking about your flair. with all these like bands that have like the old guy and new guy, do you ever like, do you like both? Are you able to like both, or are you like, I like the old guy or I like the new guy?
Well, I mean, I mean,
because it's different. It's like different, but the same.
It is. Well, the biggest, I mean, the ongoing biggest argument is Van Halen. That's the number one.
Okay. Like, tell me what this is. I'm not a music person.
Yeah. You're younger and you're not like the hard rock.
No. But, I'm like a pop girl.
Well, like AC/DC, Bon Scott and Brian Johnson are both awesome. Like they're both Highway to Hell and Back in Black are both iconic metal. So it's like, no one really says I hate the new guy. Cause he's just, he just worked. You know, same with like a band like Black Flag, where, you know, people have different favorite of their different, whatever, four singers. But, you know, Henry Rollins basically became like the iconic front man of that band. But with Van Halen, for whatever reason, Diamond Dave was such a personality and they were so huge. Like, if you're old enough to be around in summer of 84, when that album came out and Panama and Jump and all that, I mean, MTV, it was like the biggest thing ever. And it was awesome. It was like, you know, I'm not a big metal guy, but I mean, they were, you know, Van Halen's like, you know, one of the, you know, iconic American bands of all time. And right at the peak of that, Dave quit and went solo. And they got Sammy Hagar in. And Sammy Hagar was successful in his own right, but it was a different vibe. He was more of like a, he was just Sammy, you know? So he was just so, you know, and I don't know. I was not a fan. I was, I never bought an album after, you know, I was totally anti new guy.
Really?
Yeah. I was totally anti new guy, for many, many years. And, it was only in the last like 10 years that, my old bass player, who's like younger and was a Van Hagar fan, he was like, you have to watch the concert movie Live Without a Net, which is like the concert, the live movie they made just after he joined, I guess. And it's awesome. It's like, it's total Van Halen, but with him singing. And I thought it was really impressive. And so he kind of grew up, like, I still am not the biggest fan of their music. It's a little more poppy and lightweight than the Roth years. But, you know, Sammy as a person, I think, is awesome. And he had the last laugh because he's living his best life right now.
What about when the new guy performs the old guy's music, though?
Oh, so that was one of the, in that band specifically. I don't remember the exact demands, even though I just read his biography. But I think Sammy basically refused to sing old Van Halen stuff, except for, I think they did Panama, maybe one other one. I don't even know if they did Jump. I don't think they did Jump. I definitely did Panama. That might be the only one. So that was the incredible thing, is that they didn't rest on their laurels. They made a new album. Mm. They continued to make new albums, and they had huge smash hits. And they sold, even though they're the biggest band in the world before Sammy joined, they ended up selling more records after he joined.
Wow.
Yeah. But they were all like, you know, they're all like super radio friendly, you know, like love song type of things, you know.
I guess that's why they sold so many.
I guess it was just their moment too. But so they were, you have to respect a band that can play a 2-hour concert and not play any of their old hits. Just play new stuff
and also
be successful at it.
The thing that people probably want to hear, they probably want to hear some of the old hits. And so
you imagine going to see like Led Zeppelin and them not playing Stairway to Heaven? It's like, no. You know, or going to see Smash Mouth and we're not going to play All Star tonight, you know?
Going to Carly Rae Jepsen and she doesn't play Call Me Maybe?
Exactly. Same thing.
My nightmare. Absolutely.
Worst. So yeah, you, but they did it.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I think they're the only ones that did it.
Do you think it matters like why the new guy is replacing the old guy?
Think it matters why the new guys are placed.
Because I've been thinking about this because, like, for example, one of these like new guys versus old guys that I did not grow up watching Bewitched, but my dad did. Mm-hmm. And Dick York and Dick Sargent, it's the famous one.
Sure.
And it's partially because Dick York had a back injury and he like literally physically was not able to continue. And
we didn't know that when we were kids.
Yeah. And he continued on as long as they could. And then they started introducing Dick Sargent, who kind of took over. Yeah. And he played the character differently because like Dick York playing Darren, he was like shocked by the magic, and then the whole reasoning behind Sargent was that like by the time that he stepped in, his character would not have been as shocked by the magic.
Right. No, I remember it being a thing when I was a kid for sure, before, you know, the internet discussion groups existed. Just like, you know, like, what's going on here? I mean, same with, I think,
and they're both named Dick, which is confusing.
That was weird. And then I think Marilyn from the Addams Family too, they replaced her.
Mm-hmm.
The other one that was big when I was a kid was when they did the Brady Bunch reunion specials, and Jan didn't do the reunion, so they had a different actress playing Jan in like very Brady Christmas or Brady Brides, or one of those like made for TV movies that I was super into Brady Bunch.
What is that? I can't remember the TV show name right now, but like Alfalfa's on it.
Our gang, Little Rascals.
Little Rascals, Our Gang. I think there's like through the season, like one of the characters, like at first it's like a girl and then it's like a boy and girl, or it's a boy and then it's a girl in boy's clothing and then it's like a boy again. Like they
really?
Keep on. Yeah, there's like a few episodes.
I used to be really into Little Rascals.
I need to find
it. It's all filmed in Culver City.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, if you watch the old ones, if you get the box sets and you could see like when they do like the drag races on the street, you could recognize Washington Avenue and Culver Hotel and all that stuff.
So yeah,
same with Laurel and Hardy, all the Hal Roach stuff.
God, I love all this LA
stuff. Hal Roach Studios was Sony.
Yeah.
The Little Rascals would change their entire cast every few years.
Oh, would they?
Yes, okay. They had different eras. So they had like before Spanky and Alfalfa and Darla and Buckwheat, there was a whole nother silent.
I love
a whole,
Spanky.
I love all of
them. Spanky's my favorite.
Well, you know, Jackie Cooper, who the actor who played, he played the boss in the Superman movies in the 80s. He was a little rascal. And so was Robert Blake.
Oh my God. It's kind of like the Disney.
The totally not guilty murderer, Robert Blake.
Yeah. It's like,
he was Mickey Kupatowski in the old Little Rascals.
It's like the Disney Mouseketeers before the Mouseketeers.
Exactly. Ryan and Ken.
Yeah.
Jan. And then the other one that was big for me in the 90s, which was weird, was when they made the Twin Peaks movie. And
Fire Walk With Me?
Yeah. And they replaced, what's her name? With Moira Kelly.
I watched that on a date.
What's the brunette's name? I'm drawing a blank. It's been 30 years.
I can't remember. I watched that on a date and like, I totally don't remember any of it.
Lara Flynn Boyle.
Oh, I love her.
So yeah, for the movie, she was replaced inexplicably by Moira Kelly, which I was fascinated by. That was never explained.
Yeah. And they just,
but then again, actually speaking of Robert Blake,
then
in his other movie, he just changed out the lead actor halfway through the movie. In Lost Highway.
And then also oh my God. I just watched it for the Bev calendar. The movie, why can't I remember the name? Not Discreet Charm and the Bourgeoisie.
Eating Raoul?
No. Oh gosh. I'm going to come back to this.
Oh, the Fellini one?
Not Fellini. It's, it double featured with Discreet Charm of the Bourgeoisie, where it's like he has two actresses playing the same character.
Yeah, I heard you talk. I've never seen that one.
I can't.
That was one of my blind spots.
I'm blanking on the name. Oh my gosh. Drats. Anyway.
I have the schedule right on my desk.
It's okay. but it's funny though, because it's like you have all these people that are like playing the same character. And I think also for Twin Peaks, it's like you can attribute to that. Oh, that's just David Lynch.
Dream Logic.
Yeah, he's just doing Dream Logic.
Yeah.
But there is like some production reason as to why she did not return.
Like in Back to the Future, what was it, 3, when Crispin Glover didn't?
Well, and that created that whole entire, there's a whole clause in SAG now because of that.
Right.
Because they used like a guy that looked, for those of you that don't know the story, when Crispin Glover did not return to Back to the Future, I think it was the second one, as the father character, they basically had a stand-in pretend to be him, and it looked like him, and it kind of, I think it sounded like him, but it wasn't him. And he sued and won. And now there's a whole rule about it. I forget what the rule has, a really cool name.
It's basically the 80s version of AI.
Yeah.
It's like real life AI just replacing it. You know, and you're like, you can't, that's like, you know.
You can't do that.
But I think 2 is actually the best one. I love 2.
I like 1 and 2.
One is obviously great.
But when you watch 1 and 2 back to back, it's so perfect.
Speaking of 1 to show my kids, so I finally showed them 1. Back to the Future, and they really liked it. But I waited till like pretty recently, because you know we always check like Common Sense Media to see if it's appropriate for kids, you know, and and you find out that a lot of these 80s movies are not appropriate for kids that you thought that were. I mean, I guess it's fine, but I tend to be more protective because my parents weren't, you know.
Yeah, there's this website called, I think it's called Does the Dog Die?
Oh, yeah.
And you can go on and it'll give you like a bunch of tags for like a bunch of stuff that happens.
We use Common Sense Media, which is basically the same thing. So it's basically a user, you know, the parents say, you know, all good except for the date rape scene, which is, you know, highly inappropriate. So that was the scene that I was worried about, the car scene.
Yeah.
Where Biff like tries to rape her basically. And, but it goes by, so we finally watched it and I was like waiting for it to happen. It goes by so quick. And then the good guy, Crispin Glover, comes in and
punches him.
And so it kind of went over quick and it was not a big deal. But then we didn't have time to watch the second one back to back. So it's like, it's been in the queue for like 6 months now and I got to get to that.
No, you got to get to that with your kids.
But the other one was Goonies. I was like, oh, this is totally kid-friendly. And it's like really scary and lots of cursing.
Goonies is kid-friendly though. I mean, okay.
But they're like 5. Like that's a little, I think it was a couple 5 years ago.
I'm trying to remember when I first saw Goonies though. I turned out fine.
Yeah.
You turned out fine.
Yeah. It's not going to be scarred. The worst is they'll have these, you know, big DVD collections of cult movies from Vinegar Syndrome and Severin that they'll have to cart from house to house for the rest of their lives like me. You know, that's what happens. You get hooked on cult movies early, you know?
Oh yeah. Then you have them for the rest of your life. But it's important to get hooked on physical media. Like, I mean, like 28 Days Later, you can't get the DVD of that. You can't stream it. It's like one of the hardest movies to find right now because it's all tied up with rights issues.
Yeah, there's a few of those.
Goes for so much money right now.
Really?
It's crazy how much 28 Days Later is worth.
I don't think I have it. I'm trying to think.
I know. Now you're like, oh, where is mine?
I haven't watched that one since it came out.
I know. I haven't seen it.
I don't remember it that well.
I just remember there's like that one shot of like, I think he's like looking up and like a zombie blood like drips in someone's eyeball.
I think I'd resisted seeing that one for years because I conflated it with Sandra Bullock 28 Days, the rehab movie.
Oh.
And I'm like, I don't want to see a movie about rehab.
It's funny. When I was younger, I used to like argue about like the 28 Days Later thing with everyone because I'm like, it's not a zombie movie. It's a rage film. And it's like, I'm so persnickety in my 17-year-old mind.
Yeah, like a boss.
So when you have new guy versus old guy, James Bond, you got to talk about it. Because for you, James Bond, Roger Moore, like, was the OG for you when you watched it. And then you find out later he is the new guy. And then eventually he becomes the old guy.
I was pretty snobby about Bond in high school because I actually, you know, just I have to admit, I don't think I've ever seen the Timothy Dalton, Pierce Brosnan ones.
I have.
I think I saw one of them and I just never, it's not that I was like super anti. I was just like, oh, it's like.
What about the Daniel Craig ones? You've seen those?
I love the Daniel Craig. I think, you know, I was as anti as anybody. Oh, blonde Bond, And then I saw it. I was like, this is amazing. You know, I love Daniel Craig now.
What about Lazenby? Have you seen Lazenby?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. No, he was great. I mean, Majesty's Secret Service is one of the, is a great Bond. I haven't rewatched it super recently, but it has one of the best end title songs with Louis Armstrong.
Yeah.
We have all the time in the world. No, he was good. I don't really remember him specifically being better or worse than anybody else, but he was fine.
Yeah, I like. I read the thing that Roger Moore said where he was like, look, no one will believe that I can beat up a man like Sean Connery could.
Right.
But I can make him laugh.
Right.
And so he was like, I'm going to put, just like how we talked about, he's going to put his complete own
spin.
He played
it for laughs, yeah.
He played it for laughs. He's like, just totally going to do that. And I wish, I think Pierce Brosnan succeeded in.
I heard he's good. I need to watch those. I don't think I've watched those movies.
And I noticed that Timothy Dalton, my guy friends love those movies, but like, I don't find him.
I got kind of bored with them in the '80s because everything was about the Cold War and Russians. It just got kind of repetitive.
Like, that makes sense. Like the subject matter itself rather than
I just wasn't
Bond.
Super interested in like, I think when they have a really interesting, you know, villain is when it's more interesting to me.
Yeah. And I also, the thing about Bond that's interesting is we talked about how like with the David Lynch or Fire Walk With Me when he replaces the actors, it was just like a David Lynch thing. With Bond, there's this whole debate, okay, is Bond the same guy throughout this entire series, or is James Bond like a pseudonym? Like, is he just an agent? Like, is he a different person for each of these or not?
I just think it's an endless reboot, right? With Batman, like, how many times have they done that? And you could just, like, tell, like, I'm glad they finally stopped, like, leaning into the origin story with, you know, the parents getting killed and the whole thing. It's like, every time they make the movie again, they have to tell the whole story again. It's like, just pick it up later on in the story, you know? I don't know, because how could you have,
like, I think 007 is like an agent and like anyone could be 007.
No, that's true. That's how the last movie ended,
and like, I think James Bond is like anyone could be James Bond. Like, they could just put anyone in, like, in the universe itself. But some people I know are like, no, James Bond is the same person because, like, oh, his wife and stuff.
Yeah.
And
I think it's an actual person. I mean, 007 is deaf because did you see the newest movie?
Yeah, I did.
So that's unfortunate. I thought it was really good. But they basically, you know, they have a new 007 basically, but she's not James Bond.
Yeah.
But,
I don't like that.
Really?
I don't like it. I don't like it.
I don't know. I enjoyed it.
I guess I'm hating on the new girl. So not the new guy, but the new girl.
The new girl.
I wonder if she's going to be.
Are they going to make a movie? I thought that was just wrapping up
the
storyline.
Maybe they will actually make. I don't know. Maybe I don't think they're going to have a female James Bond.
I mean, no. But I do think.
No.
The patriarchy will allow the box office to.
Let's be real. I'm going to be real really quick. My favorite thing about James Bond is that he beats anyone up, regardless of who they are. Like, when he fights Bambi and Thumper in Diamonds Are Forever, like, in that weird pool.
Oh, yeah.
It's so freaking badass that Bambi and Thumper are, like,
is that the one where he chokes out the woman, though? That kind of freaked me out as a kid.
It kind of freaks you out. But you know what, though? He does not discriminate. If you're trying to kill him, he will get you. I'm down with that.
I thought your favorite thing was Daniel Craig and those little short.
Definitely not. Sorry to Daniel Craig if you're listening to this, but you're not my favorite Bond.
He's pretty badass, though. I liked it.
I think I got Daniel Craig fatigue because I saw he was in so many movies. He was like in that Ghost House movie. But he was in like a Ghost House movie, and then he was in that Cowboys versus Aliens movie.
Yeah,
I saw all of those in theaters, and I was just like Daniel Craig'd out.
So, are you a fan of Knives Out series?
No.
Yeah, I liked him. His voice, his accent really bothered me, but And I didn't love the first one. I kind of felt the same about both. I thought they're really well made and really interesting, but they didn't super grab me.
Yeah, I think everyone has like their pet peeves like in movies. And like Quentin, like he hates sex scenes that have food in them.
Sex scenes with food.
That's like what, so he must have like hated, well, he actually does hate. Example. Well, the cook, the thief, the wife, and her lover.
Oh, I haven't seen that,
like, he does not like that movie. I saw it recently. I liked it and enjoyed it. But like for me, I don't like vomiting.
Oh, yeah, the worst.
And that was like in the Knives Out thing. Wasn't there like a whole vomit, like whenever she lies or whatever, oh my God, she vomits?
I just watched a movie on the plane. What did I just watch? What's it called? Triangle of Sadness.
Oh, yeah, and that has the whole... I was actually told by my friends, Gala...
It has like a half an hour of like...
Yeah, they told me, Gala, just so you know, there is like half an hour vomiting in this movie.
And active diarrhea. And that's like the other graphic thing. Diarrhea.
That's the other thing
like
I
coming
hate.
Out of the... I'm like, what are you... Why that's, are you showing
that's
this?
That's the other thing I hate. I hate diarrhea and I hate butt jokes in movies. Like, so everything everywhere all at once when they have to grab the thing, they're like, I'm going to put the statue up my butt to change. I hated that. Bridesmaids, when the bride is in the street pooping, hated that.
What about Quentin? What about the Christopher Walken scene with the watch up his ass?
Sorry, I don't like
Did
it.
Your dad
I
write
don't,
that?
I don't think so. Dad, if you're listening, didn't like it.
So did you see Triangle of Sadness yet?
No, because I don't have any desire to see it. And like, there's a few things. And like my friend, when my film club came to town, and we were deciding what we were going to watch because they were there for like 3 days. And so we ended up seeing Shane and Monty Walsh. But the other choice was Gummo. And my friends know I don't like any kind of animal abuse or anything.
I almost wore my Gummo shirt today.
Yeah.
I was going to try to impress you.
Good
with
choice.
Cool.
You didn't. I like the Black Sabbath shirt.
I like
my
Black Sabbath shirt. The movie, not the band.
Yeah, exactly. But like they know I don't like animal abuse. And they're like, God, we're not going to make you see Gummo. I know you'd sit up with us with the Gummo. I know your fist would be clenched like that Arthur meme where like Arthur like has his like fist clenched. That'll be me in Gummo.
Yeah, that's a rough one. But just to wrap up. So Triangle of Sadness, I hated the first act. Because it's like three distinct acts.
Yeah.
I hated the first act. I despised the second act. And I loved the third act. It's all on an island.
Without giving it away, like, was it tonally different? Or like what?
It's a different setting. So like basically the first act is like two models arguing for a half an hour. Like literally just arguing about money. And the second act is all in a boat. When everyone gets sick and then starts barfing and all this crazy stuff happens. And it's like,
thinking about that.
It's gross. But then the third act, I don't want to spoil anything, but they basically are on a desert island. And the way things progress is so interesting and not expected that it's really, really, it's worth seeing just for that. Like, it's a cool movie. But I fast forwarded over half the barf scenes. I couldn't take it. It was so graphic.
Yeah, I'm definitely not watching that.
I don't like animal abuse or barfing. And if you.
I think we don't like the same thing. So.
Yeah, did you ever watch that show Lilyhammer?
No.
The one that Little Steven made after Sopranos?
No. I don't watch like a ton of... I watch a ton of reality TV, but not a ton of scripted television.
Fun fact, it was actually the first show ever on Netflix. The very first Netflix show.
Oh, really?
Wow. It was right before House of Cards. So it's like 10, 12 years ago. Great show. He basically plays the same character he plays in Sopranos, but he's in witness relocation. He moves to Norway, fish out of water. It's really good. But the very first scene of the pilot is killing a dog. And I'm like, I'm out. But I stuck with it, and I'm glad I did. So sometimes I can make it.
Well, it was interesting. So my dad was up for doing American Psycho, to adapt American Psycho.
Before
it was.
20
years ago? Yeah. Because he had worked with Brett before, obviously. And he just didn't want to do it because that dog sequence in the book, it said it's really, really graphic. And he declined it because of the dog killing. And then he woke up in the middle of the night and was like, okay, I figured out how to do it. And he called him and like, oh, sorry, we already got someone. But I think the movie turned out. Great.
It's a masterpiece.
And I like American Psycho because it's made all by women.
I was going to say, and women wrote it and directed it.
And
too.
Produced it too. Yeah. Roberta Hanley is the female producer on it.
I need to rewatch that. I used to watch that a lot back when it came out, like that and like Fight Club and a couple other ones. And I kind of overdosed on those and I haven't rewatched them in a while. But
I'm not a Fight Club fan.
I like Fight Club. It's not one of my big, big movies, but it's.
I saw it with my ex. Maybe that's why.
Kind of a classic. There were some good 90s, 2000s movies I have a lot of that I come back to, like Ghost World, one of my all-time favorites. Sideways, I love Sideways, like Alexander Payne.
It's so funny, I remember Ghost World, I saw that movie, I was at a film school summer camp at Pepperdine, and I saw it like there, and I was like I don't know, it's weird. It's like weird when you like have like a memory of exactly where you saw a movie.
Yeah. You should rewatch that. It's so rewatchable. It holds up so well. Because I was the guy who wrote the comic that it was based on, Daniel Clowes. I was like super into his comic book 8-Ball in the 90s. And so he made Ghost World. They did Art School Confidential. I think another one. But so I already knew what the source material. So I was super into it. And that was also the first time Scarlett Johansson was, I'd heard of her.
Yeah.
And
Steve Buscemi.
She's
great in the movie.
She's great. Yeah. And just the whole, it was so well done with... sticking to the graphic novel. I love
it. Yeah, I love Klaus. I kind of lump him in with Charles Burns, like who did Black Hole. Have you ever seen his work?
Charles Burns, Black Hole.
I hope, oh God, I hope that's his name.
you might have, Black Hole, is that the movie?
It's a comic book.
Oh, no.
Oh, it's really good. It's about these kids that start getting like all these physical deformities on them, but it's actually an STD. So it's like a sexually transmitted disease, but like it shows like in horns and like all this stuff, and they can't figure out why it's happening.
I haven't heard of that one.
I like him because of his heavy use of black ink, like when he does his comic books.
Sure. Yeah, you know, I kind of got out of the graphic novel. It was just too much.
Well, but your son's back in it.
Yeah, and I still have my three long boxes of comics in the garage. So when he's ready, I have everything for him still.
Yeah, my dad did that to me too.
I got all my X-Men from the 80s and all that stuff.
Yeah, my dad did that. I remember I got at school, I got like banned for reading Sandman. They actually took my book away because it had nudity in it.
Oh, there was some in the 90s. There was like Faust. That was a gnarly one. Lobo. There was some like hard. They got pretty graphic in some of those.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
It's just funny though. I also took The Stand to school, and they took The Stand away from me. They're like, this is too mature for you at a seventh grade
banning
level.
Books?
Yeah.
Wow. Man,
just like, you cannot watch.
We could do a whole other podcast on just Stephen King adaptions. And
yeah. Well, I had Mick on, and he adapted several of them.
That's
so
right.
Most
of them have been pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I think they are pretty good. I think there's a lot to choose from.
I didn't realize, like, a Dead Zone was always one of my favorites as a kid.
Dead Zone's so good.
Is David Cronenberg?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that till like yesterday. I think on PCP they mentioned that, and
everyone watch that. Yeah. Everyone has to watch Dead Zone.
I love Dead Zone.
Oh,
we just hit the Dead Zone.
We hit our Dead Zone. That's so funny. Our time is up. Zach, is there any final thought that you'd like to leave the audience with?
Go watch something besides superhero movies. and listen.
If you could recommend one movie to the audience to go watch?
Oh my God. Well, I've mentioned a bunch already. The ones that formed me were, the 70s, Harold and Maude is probably, if someone says, what's your favorite movie? I always say Harold and Maude.
That's a great
choice. I'll say Harold and Maude. Why not?
Yeah. And I'm going to say To Live and Die in L.A. because I saw that for the first time last night.
Yeah.
So
that's
I'm
a favorite.
And I cannot stress this enough. Whenever anyone says, go watch a movie, do not look it up on Letterboxd. Don't read reviews to decide if you want to see it.
Right.
Just go see it.
Yeah. That's the best. Certain movies that you've seen throughout my life have been total surprises like that. Like I walked into Braveheart like that when it first came out. No way. I'm like, Mel Gibson directed a movie. Okay, I'll go see it. And I was like, it blew my mind. That happens. Sixth Sense, another one.
That's one that, like, if you don't know the ending to Sixth Sense, you should go watch that immediately,
right?
Because my dad ruined that for me. I was next to the washing machine in our old house, and he's like, you're not going to remember the ending of this, and then proceeded to tell me, and Dad, I still remember.
It's not super rewatchable, because once you know, you know.
Once you know, you know. That, and also my dad, sorry, Dad, I'm just, like, harping on you right now. He also ruined the ending of Bicycle Thieves for me.
I haven't watched that in years, I don't remember the ending.
When I was, like, 15, I think that one I've forgotten, because it's not as iconic, but
right. I don't remember
he was like, you're not going to remember before you watch. Well,
don't spoil it.
Yeah, don't spoil it. Come on, don't spoil
it. So yeah, go watch 70s movies because they're the best.
Yeah.
And, film noir, and then also 80s teensploitation.
Yeah. Go do it. Thank you so much to Zach for coming on the show. If you'd like to keep up with Zach, you can find him on Instagram at DividedByZach or on his website, zachgoodie.com. That is ZACHGOODE.com. I'm Gala Avery, and this has been The Gala Show. The Gala Show is brought to you by Insert-O-Matic. This episode was executive produced by Roger Avery and produced by Gala Avery. Music composed by Andy Milburn. As always, I'm your host, Gala Avery. Copyright 2023, all rights reserved. Despite me sharing the same last name with this charity, I don't have any affiliation with it, besides the fact the issue is very near and dear to my heart. Did you know that in the United States, 2.7 million children currently have a parent in prison, and it's estimated that 10 million children have experienced parental incarceration at some point in their lives? I was one of these kids, and as an adult, I am really grateful to be able to give back to Project Avery. Their mission is to build leadership from within by supporting community through programs such as mentoring and outdoor education, and also to remove the stigma surrounding having a parent that's incarcerated. You don't have to feel alone. If you know a kid who could use these resources or would like to donate money or time to the charity, please go to Project Avery, that's AVARY.org, to check out what this amazing charity is all about. Again, that's ProjectAvery.org. Thank you guys from the bottom of my heart.